Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of RedefinedOnline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill talks to Senator Heidi Gansert, representing Nevada's 15th Senate District. Education choice demand is growing in Nevada between a robust charter school sector and a means-tested tax credit scholarship program. The two discuss the recent legislative session that led to the expansion of the scholarship, the long-term impact of COVID-19 on the Silver State's education system, and what happened to the state's infamous education savings account that never came to fruition. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the episode.
So I'm happy to welcome Senator Heidi Gansert, who is from Nevada. She's a Republican representing District 15. So welcome, Senator.
Thank you, Doug. I'm pleased to join you today.
So I want to talk a little bit about the EdChoice movement in Nevada. You guys have been in the national news a long time about the things that have gone on in your state. So give me a little context before the session started this spring. Talk about the kind of options that are available for families today in Nevada.
Okay, so in Nevada, we originally had some work done around educational savings accounts, which would make available funds, and there was no means testing, no income testing on those, and those really didn't get very far because we had some language in our Constitution that prohibited that type of money going to private organizations. And so then we went with opportunity scholarships, and opportunity scholarships are means tested, so a family of four can earn as much as 300% of the federal poverty limit. So that's about $78,600 a year to be eligible. And what we found is that we've had incredible demand for those scholarships, and we worked on a tax credit program. So instead of setting aside general fund, we allowed businesses, instead of paying a certain type of business tax, to put those funds into an opportunity scholarship program. And those programs were run by local organizations. It was really a grassroots effort, and we were very grateful that so many businesses opted in. And the program was originally started in 2015 and had an automatic escalator on it, which helped. So when we first started, we had like a 10% escalator every year. So the program was growing, but then there were some that just didn't want to have that much money in a bucket, basically, in these opportunity scholarships. So over the years, it's declined. So let's see, in 2015, we had quite a bit. We added a lot of money. We added like an extra $20 million in 2017, and then they backed off in 2019. And thankfully, this year in 2021, we were able to get the funding up to almost $23 million over a biennium. So $11.4 million every year, which is enough to fund about 2,500 students to go to the school of their choice in Nevada. And then you talked about what other choices. Our charter schools are growing like gangbusters. So right now, Clark County is the largest school district. That's in Las Vegas, or Las Vegas resides in Clark County. And then Washoe County, where Reno is the second largest school district. But the number of charter school students is about to eclipse the total number of students in Washoe County. So charter schools will become the second largest school district in our state, probably within the next 2 years.
Wow, that's amazing. So let's go back a little bit, because the ESA bill that passed, I know that it got a lot of national attention and people around the country were very excited. So I want to make sure I get all the details right. There was an issue of how it was funded, right? And so the court said it was unconstitutional because of the funding. Is that correct?
Yeah, the funding, state funding is not allowed to go to private organizations the way that they had it put together. And what happened is in 2015, we had a Republican governor and majorities in both houses that were Republicans. So that was the window when it was created. And then we could never get it fixed because after that, we didn't have that trifecta. We didn't have both houses and a Republican governor. So the other piece that was created at the time was opportunity scholarships. And we were able to get those funded. And again, those are means tested. And that's one of the significant differences between the two, is having that means tested. And we found that over 60% of our opportunity scholarship recipients are minority students. They're all low income and they're minority students. And so this is really helping some of the kids who may not, or who may reside in a school district or a school, be zoned for a school that's just not at a high level of performance.
Okay. So I want to go a little more detail about what you were able to do this session. So you went into the session thinking, okay, we need to make it more available, raise the cap. Are those the kind of things you worked on?
Right. So what they did in 2019 is they stopped allowing new students to enter the program. So they kind of capped the dollars. And they also said, if you're not already in it, then you can't get in it. So even if you were a sibling, you could not get into the program. And so at this during this session, we were able to remove that barrier and then also add funding to it. So we had about 1,050 students across the state that had opportunity scholarships by the beginning of the session. And now at the end of the session, we can fund as many as 2,500 a year, and it's open to new students, including siblings.
So one of the challenges you have in Nevada, of course, is you mentioned you had a Republican majority in both houses, and you had a Republican governor, and you had a lot of momentum. And then I think the state swung, right? And you got a Democratic governor. And have you lost both houses, or is it both houses Democrat now?
Exactly right. We have Democrat majorities in both houses, and we had a Democrat elected as governor in 2018. It was extremely challenging. And what happened is that a number of us just stayed at the table. I mean, we've been fighting for opportunity scholarships for years, and we stayed there because it's so important to these families and to the individual students. I mean, they are the most important interest group in right. our It's not the right. teachers union, it's not industry, it's not all these other things. It's about students and what we can do that's best for them. So we stayed at the table, and as in most sessions, there's end game negotiations, and we were able to negotiate both some money for opportunity scholarships, but also some money for Title I charter schools. So we've had these discussions in our state. You know, we've got these charter schools and they're not serving low income areas. Well, they didn't have enough funding to be able to serve low income areas. So we've got some money set aside for Title I charter schools as well. And we also put some money aside for children with disabilities, which I think is going to help as well.
Yeah, so this is interesting because it's something that other legislators could learn from. When your state flips from one party to the other, historically, of course, Republicans have been much stronger on education freedom issues than Democrats because of the ties the Democrats have to the existing system, school superintendents, school boards, teacher unions, et cetera. So you have that tension. So I guess what happened, you tell me if I'm wrong here, when the Dems took over, that's when they put the caps on, you know, no new students. And is that true? That's sort of.
Yeah, absolutely. That happened in 2019, and they took off the automatic escalator, and they also prohibited new students from entering the program. But, you know, something else that's sort of interesting, we do have some Democrat colleagues who teach in charter schools. So wow. Some of them understand the importance of choice. So there's some tension within their party. And again, when you focus on the children themselves and what suits the children the best, it's kind of hard to argue against opportunity scholarships.
Yeah, we have the same thing in Florida. A lot of the Democrats, people of color, their constituents, you know, low income. A lot of these folks represent low income communities and urban communities. And they have a lot of kids on the scholarships. So you see a divide in the Democratic Party that's pretty much depending on whether your constituency, between on the race and the class of the constituency. It's kind of interesting. But so I see that around the country, that a lot of Democrats who represent people of color and low-income families, you look at the polling data too, it shows that EdChoice polls very, very well in minority communities, in low-income communities, and urban communities. So it's an interesting tension in the Democratic Party.
Well, you know, if you're trying to break the cycle of generational poverty, education is the key. So yeah. We need to do the best we can for our children. And because they're in an underperforming school, I mean, that could doom them, that right? Their path is completely different than if they go to a better school and maybe even go into higher ed.
Yeah.
And a community college or university. And the trajectory for themselves and also for their families changed forever once they're able to do that.
So I just want to finish the run on the amazing job you were able to do getting this legislation through. And so now that you're in the minority party, you had to look for leverage in order to get it through. What kind of leverage were you able to use in order to convince the Dems to make some fairly significant improvements to these programs?
Well, what had happened is during one of the special sessions when we had budget cuts, there were some resolutions. So there's a couple of ways to increase taxes in Nevada. One way is through the legislative process, but then you can also put measures on the ballot. So there were three measures that were poised to go on the ballot that would have significantly raised taxes on mining and probably put some, if not all, of the mining companies out of business in the state. And then the teachers union from Clark County or Las Vegas basically was positioned with other ballot questions that was going that were going to tax gaming. So we had these two industries that were willing to come to the table and kind of talk about, you know, what can we do around taxes, because we don't want to be on the ballot. We want to have something that that is manageable and that we can contribute. And so essentially mining came to the table and said, these are the types of resources we can contribute. And in Nevada, we also have a constitution that requires a two-thirds supermajority for new taxes. So they needed to, the Democrats needed some votes to be able to create a tax that the mining industry stepped forward and said, this is what we can afford to do, and this is what we want to contribute, and we want to lead on this. So mining came to the table, and they needed some Republicans to support that initiative. And so there were a number of Republicans that came to the table. And with that, we were able to put even more money into education. So the money from mining went to education. And then on top of that, we were able to add more money to opportunity scholarships, to the Dean's Future Scholar programs, to programs for kids with disabilities, and so forth. So it ended up, you know, being very beneficial all the way around for students.
Let's talk a little bit more about charter schools, because I was really impressed with the numbers that you shared. To be authorized in Nevada, how does that work? Is it school districts? Is it universities, independent authorizers? What's the authorization?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways to start a charter school. One is through the state, and the other way is through the school districts. And so when charters first came to Nevada, they were sponsored by school districts. But now, for the most part, they're sponsored by the state. And that model, if you know, I've suggested to those who were sponsored by districts that they should convert their model to being sponsored by the state, because then the state has better sort of better track of the finances. And when there are dollars, that we actually have there's a board, and there's an executive director who's an employee of the Department of Education. So you've got someone within the Department of Education who's championing you if you are state sponsored. And the vast majority are state sponsored. And what we found, we also converted to a new funding formula for education, K-12 education. And what we found is that some schools, charters and non-charters, needed hold harmless money, or some school districts and charter schools, and it was easier to negotiate for those that were state sponsored. But again, they have a champion for them that's embedded in the Department of Ed, as well as other folks who are, you know, written them on and trying to help them.
How do you see the pandemic obviously reshuffled the cards in various aspects of all of our lives? But certainly education, you know, no one's seen anything like this in any of our lifetimes. How do you think the pandemic is, what will be the long-term impact of the pandemic on education in Nevada? What's your crystal ball tell you?
Well, so I think the difference, we have 17 school districts because we have 17 counties in Nevada, and each district or county could decide what they want to do with their schools.
Right.
Up here in the county, so I live in northern Nevada by Tahoe, Reno, Lake Tahoe, and they opened the school district and they ran a hybrid program. Clark County, which is Las Vegas, which has the vast, vast majority of students, was closed until March 1st of 2021.
Wow.
And, so what this did is created an exclamation point on the need for alternatives for children to be able to attend. And some of them went online. And, you know, there are some students who probably will continue to stay online, and there's probably going to be some hybrid situations as well. So I think what we learned from the pandemic is the importance of having choices and alternatives for education, because the charters weren't necessarily closed, but the regular schools were closed. And then like the Catholic schools and the private schools were open 100%.
Right.
Talk about contrast.
Right.
So I think you're going to see some students who are interested in some hybrid. You're going to see students that have moved to a private system and stay in a private system. You'll have, I think, greater demand for charters than ever before.
Wow. So let's talk about moving forward. I don't want to ask you to reveal all your cards, but what's on your agenda, you know, in the future? What kind of improvements would you like to see in the choice programs in Nevada moving forward?
Well, I think we'll keep our opportunity scholarships, so our means-tested scholarships, at the forefront, because that provides the most flexibility. I think we'll continue to encourage charter schools, and charters, you know, have accountability, and they actually, their outcomes are better, the performance is better. So I think we're going to continue to see a growth in charter schools. So I think we'll keep opportunities at the forefront, scholarships at the forefront, charters at the forefront. And then we have so many children with disabilities who could be better served sometimes in private schools. And so we're going to keep pushing on that to make sure that we can get the best resources to students depending upon their needs.
Is there any hope for the educational savings account idea coming back to Nevada? I mean, some states, for example, I mean, as you probably know, there's like 20 states this year that have pursued that concept. And ironically enough, it was your state that sort of put it on the map, really. I mean, it started in Arizona, but I remember being on conferences, everybody was talking about, you know, your state and the impact. So people around the country are trying to emulate what you did, but weren't able to implement. But we mentioned special needs kids. A lot of the ESAs around the country are for special needs kids. I know in Florida, we have about 18,000 kids on an ESA. These are kids with spina bifida, Down syndrome, autism, and, you know, they need physical therapy, occupational therapy. You know, the autism kids particularly, they're all over the place in terms of their needs, and families need a lot of flexibility with their spending dollars. Is there any hope, you know, in some states, by the way, are using tax credit funding as a way to fund it, as a way to get around some of the state constitutional issues. Is there any hope for some kind of comeback for your state in that area?
Well, what I can say is my colleague, Senator Scott Hammond, is the one who's the sort of the founder, the father of the ESA program in Nevada. And I'm not sure, you know, he worked so hard on that. I'm not sure that those are going to come back, but I do think there's still opportunities around the opportunity scholarship. So means-tested scholarships to help the spectrum of students, whether you know, some with disabilities and others that just want different choices for their for a school that would better fit them. But the ESA, there's a lot of animosity from other colleagues, you know, against that program, but not so much when you start talking about having a program that's means tested.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, I appreciate your time. And like I said, people around the country have been following the storyline in your state for several years now. It's been very interesting, and going back and forth from one party to the other and how you've navigated that. I think people can learn from that. Do you have any other words from wisdom for your colleagues around the country who are also navigating similar kinds of terrain? Are there any kind of lessons learned that I haven't asked you about that you'd like to share?
So I think when you look at opportunity scholarships and school choice, it's a long game. So you've got to be on the offense and, you know, keep fighting for those students. And when you consider the students themselves, not other interest groups, what's in the best interest of the students, it makes a lot of sense. Just thinking in the long run, any of those programs, and being on the offense and really fighting for the students themselves.